Stay tuned for Occupied Territory America. Yes, you heard it first. There's a name change to this show. I got tired of explaining to people on Sirius and all over the other places that I'm at that it's not about Israel and Palestine and the West Bank. It's about the United States of America occupied by the rich and corporations. So it's called Occupied Territory America, and it will be coming up in just a moment. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, stand up for your right. Get up, stand up, don't give up the fight. And this is Occupied Territory America with Mike Fader. We're supposed to have Greg Palast, as advertised, put this on the Occupied Territory America Facebook page. And we're supposed to have Greg Palast on today, investigative journalist. Many of you may know him, to talk about Hugo Chavez. However, he is not here yet, so I don't know when he's coming or if he's coming. I hope he is. Meanwhile, a couple of things to talk about. One is that if you're going to the Occupied Territory America Facebook page, it's going to still say Occupied Territory. And there's something about Facebook that after a certain number of, who knows why they do anything there, right? I mean, I think a lot of people are sort of getting tired of Facebook, I guess they are. But apparently if you have over 500 likes or something or whatever, you can't change the title of it. I don't know. Somebody should occupy Facebook, see what happens, right? Bring it back to the people where it started off. Well, it didn't start by the people. Mark Zuckerman or Zuckerberg, whatever his name is. But really, it's not so friendly, you know. Oh, here's our guest now. But I still want to make these sentences. Chair's right there. And that's your microphone. Those are your headphones. And I know you're not used to public speaking, but you can settle in. If you want to make a lot of noise, I don't mind. Rudeness never bothers me. But I'm going to make some announcements here before I start talking.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see. So if you sometimes you'll see people comment on Occupied. You put your jacket. Yeah, whatever you need to do, go do it. Sometimes you'll hear people comment on the Occupied Territory Facebook page about something they heard on Sirius, because I refer people to the page from there. And it seems a little odd. So I just want to try to coordinate everybody. If for people who don't subscribe to SiriusXM, and I know that's probably most of you, certainly a lot of you. Apparently, although I have not checked because that would make me culpable in some way, somebody is taking the broadcasts and recording them and putting them on YouTube. So if you want to hear the interviews I do and some of the other shows I do on SiriusXM, they are available, apparently, on YouTube. And I guess you'd all have to do is just put in Sirius and Mike Fader, and you should come up with various shows I've done, some several months old, some recent ones. Okay, there is that. Also, I do encourage you to go to the Facebook page and check it out. I am also going to, for some people who don't like Facebook or who are not on Facebook, I'm going to try to replicate that page. Whatever I post on there, I'm going to try to post also on a blog, which I'll try to set up in the next week or so, so that you can have access to that. All right, so our guest, Greg Palast, is here, and he can tell you about himself. I don't have a bio in front of me, but we're going to talk about Hugo Chavez, who died last week. Here he is. He's going to settle in. Do you want to take your coat off, too? It's a little warm in here. You can take your coat off if you want. Drop it on that chair. Lots of mysteries about what might happen, and one of the main reasons for the mystery is, and we're going to try to take things in sort of a linear order, and I'm sure that that will be destroyed within 5 minutes, but we're going to try to do that. One of the mysteries, of course, is since the United States has been meddling in that country forever, and in some very serious and even murderous ways, what will they do now that the man of the greatest strength is not there to prevent them from doing it? So that's one of the questions we're going to ask today. But Greg here, first of all, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself, because I don't have your volume.
Usual. Yeah. Well, here's the propaganda. Actually, I just saw on a website today something called you know, no communist or something, said Greg Palast, communist. And it had that, you know, that red, white, blue Obama image. It had kind of a mix me with Obama. So it says Greg Palast, communist underneath. And so that's... I am actually at gregpalast.communist is my website for those who haven't gone there. I am I'm a reporter for BBC Television. I do investigative reporting, which, as you know, is illegal under Patriot Act 3 in America, so I do it over in London. And I've written a few books.
But you record stuff here or in the field?
Yeah, I'm all over, whether it's Venezuela, the Congo, or like the third world, you know, like Texas, right? And I have been covering Hugo Chavez for BBC Television since the original coup d'etat against him, or attempted coup in 2002. And I think most people in America know me from know Greg Palast as the author of a few bestsellers, Best Democracy Money Can Buy, Armed Madhouse, Vulture's Picnic, and my latest, greatest, which is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps.
And some of those books have references, or at least one, to Chavez.
Every book, actually. I looked yesterday, and every one of my books has some Chavez in it. Excuse me, that's not him calling. I'm not that well connected.
I don't think he's that powerful.
And so I've known Chavez, actually, several years. And he called me his friend. But I have a rule against being friends with politicians. You got to keep your panties on, no matter how charming they are. And, you know, like I remember Jimmy Carter being totally impressed with Idi Amin and his hot wife. And so, you know, it's a good warning, you know, but
especially if you're a journalist, I mean, you got to have some distance, right? So,
unless you're Brian Williams.
I'm not talking about American media journalists.
Yeah, I'm not talking about journalists, not Americans, right? Today in Vice magazine, I just came out with an article talking about how I first connected to Chavez, which is I'm giving a lecture at London School of Economics, which is my other side. You know, I have kind of a Raiders of the Lost Ark thing, you know, Indiana Jones thing. I do have an academic side.
Okay.
And so I was giving a lecture, and this small, dark woman comes up to me and says, President Chavez has to see you. And I said, he does. He says, he needs your help. I said, we all need help. You know, so, yeah, right. You know, and all I knew about Chavez was that, you know, to me, he was just, it was pretty unknown. You know, he was just some tin horn strong man with a load of populist bullshit and a load of oil. And, you know, and why should I care about this guy? And she said, you got to come to Caracas right now. And I said, well, first of all, 97% of the people who watch my program, and this is Britain.
Right.
It would be bigger in L.A., worse in L.A., don't know where Caracas is, don't care. And so what? It's just another, there's going to be a coup d'etat March 15th. I said, oh, great. Ides of March. I like that. I said, aren't there always coup d'etats down there? I mean, isn't this like...
In other words, what's news here?
What's news here?
Get me down there, right?
And so then she said, I got to talk to you. So it turned out, and now I can reveal it. It was actually Chavez's chief of staff who'd flown to London. Mm-hmm. To find me, because he thought that if he got out the word of the coming coup d'etat, he might not get killed. I was convinced, and I was convinced it was not only worth reporting on a potential coup d'etat, but that it would be that this guy himself had some type of story, and I was just trying to understand it. You know, was it just BS or what was going on?
Did you ask them when they first got in touch with you, why are you coming to me of all the news?
Well, I knew why they were coming to me. Chavez and the man who would become president of Ecuador, mm-hmm. Rafael Correa, who's an economist in Illinois, Nestor Kirchner, these are the lefties, Lula. All of them had read my academic writings on the IMF and et cetera. For those who don't know me, the weird story about Greg Palast is that I was a protege of Milton Friedman, and I was the only American in the Chicago Boys group. So I was right at the front edge of the right-wing Pinochet freak-out, free market, Thatcherite, Reaganite globalization, you know, the beginning of the blood-sucking operation on this planet. So I was in the middle of it, and I wrote about it.
But somebody, somebody read this and saw your reaction to that kind of way of thinking and said, this is the guy to talk to.
This is the guy who would understand what we're trying to do. And so they brought me down. Also, they knew I was an investigative reporter, so I could, like, hunt this stuff down and try to find out, by the way, who was trying to kill Chavez.
Did the BBC pay for this?
Well, the first thing I did is I went to the BBC, and they said, yeah, we're sending you to Caracas and blowing our travel budget for some slime ball with epaulets on his shoulder or something. We didn't know who this guy was. I said, but there's going to be a coup on the 15th of March. And then there wasn't, so I really looked like a jackass. Mm-hmm. But 3 weeks later... 3 weeks later, Chavez is kidnapped by the head of the Chamber of Commerce and with some guns, and which, by the way, gives a new meaning to the concept of corporate takeover. And so he's kidnapped. And so immediately BBC's, I get to the Venezuelan embassy and says, okay, let's get to Caracas and get to try to find Chavez. I was probably the first journalist to make a kind of indirect contact to Chavez to find out that, unlike what the U.S. State Department said, and therefore, the New York Times repeated that Chavez, who was kidnapped, had resigned because he realized how terribly unpopular he was, and he was a failure, so he just resigned in shame.
Well, that makes sense. That's the standard pattern for people in charge of a country in Latin America. And, I'm sorry. I think I'll just go.
Yeah, and the other is that the New York Times actually editorialized in favor of this coup d'etat, of the seizure of a president who was elected in an overwhelming landslide
and
by the public.
What was their rationale for...
Oh, he's authoritarian. He's a strong man. Unlike the victor of Florida, George Bush. Bush was president. And keep in mind, with Bush, they issued a statement, the State Department. When one journalist did say, how could you back a coup d'etat against an elected official? And Bush's State Department spokesman said, well... getting the most votes does not make your government legitimate.
No.
This is from the victor of Florida. That's a quote.
From Bush's guy?
Yeah, right. So, of course. And even worse, when I got back to the story of how Chavez got out is interesting itself. But when I got to Caracas, he'd already been helicoptered by the coup leaders back to his desk. And so when I got there, there are bullet holes in the wall still. And
they shot up his office?
Yeah, they shot up the building, and they were berserk. Well,
he was a military guy, and he himself attempted a coup in 1992, right? So how is a man like this, who is a military man, who knows that people are out to get him, not protected in a way that a bunch of people could get their way inside there?
He was traitors. Basically, you don't know who's on your side. And that screwed up the coup leaders, by the way, as well. What happened was that Chavez knew that the coup was coming. He knew exactly the day the coup was going. He knew exactly what was going to happen, and he had a battalion of tanks surround the presidential palace. But the battalion commander was actually in the plot. So, in other words, the guys he had to guard him, now he's surrounded by the coup leaders. And what happened was then they took him off by helicopter, and he told me, look, I was holding my rosary. I assumed that they veered out over the ocean. So he said, just like, the Argentine military, you're going to throw him out of the helicopter. That's how they do it. So he said, he was ready to go, but they didn't. They landed him. And
where did they take him?
They took him to a little island, a military garrison island. There's a lot of little islands off of the coast of Venezuela. Okay. They took him to this island, and they put him in. They gave him to be guarded. They handed him over to a couple young soldiers. Now, very important in the discussion of Chavez is that, like Obama, he's the first black president of Venezuela. They've never had a black president in 400 years of potentate dictators.
You have to explain that in detail. This is an important part of why Chavez was and is so popular.
And
it's essential to everything that goes on there. Right?
Yes. You have to understand, Chavez, unlike our president, who refuses to, he's not yet feels comfortable enough to turn black on America. But Chavez said, I am negro e indio. I'm half black, half Indian. And he knows that that just drives the ruling elite insane because they don't even call themselves Venezuelans. They call themselves Spaniards. They're very, very white, blonde.
And this is an old thing.
Old thing.
All the way back to the original invasions and occupations by the Spanish and the Portuguese. Right?
So they've never had, it's just assumed that there would never be a black president. And so that that's part of it. But what happened was when he went to the when he was guarded by these young guys, they were black Indian mixes, you know, themselves. And so Chavez was one of theirs. You know, it's like
and he had been what an officer. I mean, he must have gotten...
been. Yeah, he was an officer. At the military academy. Right. He had an association with the paratroopers, but for the most part, he was actually more of a professor, by the way. He's more academic than you imagine, which is why he knows my writings. And or knew my writings, I'll show him. Yeah. So what happened was these young guys handed him a cell phone. As soon as the other guys weren't looking, they said, here's our cell phone. Let's make a call. His first call was to Fidel Castro. The second was to his daughter and that he was alive and hadn't resigned. And the third was to a guy named Baduel, who was head of the Air Force, who said, okay, plan B. Now, plan B, this has never been revealed. No one knew this. Because, by the way, the Chavista story, the great heroic story of Chavez, reversing the coup d'etat, is that 100,000 people, poor people, came out of the hills and marched on the presidential palace to remove the coup leaders. That's true, but the coup leaders wouldn't have thought twice about gunning these people down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were black and Indian, as far as they're concerned. Like, they used to call Chavez a monkey, so he's just shooting monkeys, as far as they're concerned. He just shoot monkeys. So they didn't care about shooting people. What Chavez did as a backup was to actually put about 150 commandos inside hallways and these false walls inside the presidential palace, which he knew about as a military man that were there.
Mm-hmm.
So when the coup leaders came in, he basically had them surrounded inside the building. And he said, and so the Air Force General Baduel said, you have a choice. Either the people are going to rip you apart, our Air Force will level the building, but more likely we're just going to gun you down where you sit right now, because if you lean over to the wall and knock on it, you'll get a knock back.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 48 hours to return Chavez unharmed to his desk.
Amazing story.
And what happened was they didn't wait 24 hours. They waited about 2 hours. They didn't wait for the guys to come out of the wall. They took off their sashes. This guy put on the presidential sash, a guy named Carmona, who was head of the Chamber of Commerce. And he had dolled himself up. He had a special suit made up to be president, and he wore the presidential sash.
So he had this all ready in advance.
It was like a Genet
play. He didn't buy that off the rack the day before.
No,
right?
No.
What happened was,
what was interesting about it, it was like a Genet play. Uh-huh. I don't want to get too highfalutin here, but,
feel free.
That's just what Google is for, right?
No,
G-E-N-E-T. And so this
Genet. We have to think of this as the opposite of Bridezilla. You know, I mean, we have to raise people.
Right. So we're going to work on this. So it was like Genet, you know, it was like the balcony or something where these people, the bishops and the ambassadors and all the rich people of Venezuela had an inaugural ball the night after they captured.
Amazing.
They had an inaugural ball in the presidential palace, and then they all had this vote for president in which what they call civil society, you know, the white people all got together and cast a vote for this guy Carmona so that he'd be officially elected. And
what was the Bush administration's response or the American ambassador's response? That's what interests me, too.
Yeah. Well, the American ambassador had just arrived, which clearly he was sent down there because the prior ambassador seemed to be coup resistant.
Uh-huh.
And so this guy, Charles Shapiro, was sent down by Bush on the 15th, by the way, of March. But they couldn't pull off the coup then. And he ran down to the presidential palace, and there's grinning pictures of him with the guys that are holding the president hostage. So you can imagine, you have to understand what this means to people in Latin America. Americans don't know this. You have the U.S. ambassador standing there with guys who've just done an armed coup d'etat and are holding the elected president hostage.
Of an overwhelmingly popular elected president.
Yeah, overwhelmingly popular.
Okay.
And I want to go back, by the way, in fact, to that issue of Chavez himself leading an attempted coup d'etat. And this is very important. What happened was that they had a kind of so-called, they had a kind of an Obama-type guy, a kind of progressive president in Venezuela, and they pulled in tons and tons, billions and billions of dollars in the Arab oil embargo of the 70s.
Oh, right. I remember.
And
that.
What happened was is all the money just fled to Miami and went up to the banks in New York and went to Miami. And a million people lived in cardboard shacks all around Caracas. These cardboard shacks. And they got none of it.
Actually, it does sound like Obama. You know, you put on a happy face. You say, here's something for you and here's something for you. And meanwhile, it's business as usual.
Right. And so the elite were taken care of. And you know, and he said, oh, there'll be a few social programs. And there was a few things. But mostly people still lived in cardboard shacks. And then when the oil prices collapsed, and by the way, Venezuela broke the embargo for the U.S. Mm-hmm. and then collapsed its own oil price. Obviously, corruption. And collapsed its oil price. Suddenly, now this nation is deeply in debt. And so the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and the big banks move in and said, okay, here's our, you know, the usual IMF austerity program. And it meant massively raising the price of cooking fuel, of food, eliminating pensions for workers, massive. I mean, Chavez's parents are, by the way, school teachers. Not like he's not a log cabin guy, but they didn't have enough to eat, mm-hmm. even though they were school teachers. So then people rioted in the streets of Caracas and all over the country, and the government shot down, killed over 300 people, just machine gunned these demonstrators. Just, I mean, massive killings of demonstrators. Not just, you know, it wasn't Ohio State, which I don't want to put the
you mean
demean that
Kent State,
Kent State.
Yeah.
But the so. Chavez was really, really shaken up as an officer, and he said, I will not agree to shoot my family or anyone else. It's my people out there. So that's when he got together with some officers, and they agreed that they were going to overthrow the government, that they're going to lead a coup d'etat, because it was no longer, when you're killing your people, you're no longer legitimate. Okay, that was his view. So he called for an uprising. It lasted about 8 minutes. And because he really didn't want to shoot other soldiers who were sent in to stop him, he thought that they would just put down their arms, and but they wouldn't. You know, they were ordered in to get him and his buddies. Mm-hmm. So Chavez said, I'm going to surrender immediately if no one's backing me. No, I give up. You can shoot me. You can execute me. You can put me in jail forever. You can torture me. You can do whatever you want to me under one condition, that you give me time to explain myself on national television.
Get out. They would let him do
and
that? It sounds like Now, we talk about literary references. It sounds like Julius Caesar, right? And Mark Antony.
Right, right, exactly.
Well, Mark Antony says, okay, you know, yeah, I know I was close friend of his, but, you know, so do me one last favor. At least let me speak at the funeral, right?
Right, yeah, right.
I'm amazed that they let him do
that.
Why would they let him? But why? Why would they let him do
well,
that?
Well, they were afraid that, well, he was saying that they would not give up, that they would have to, they would have to, you know, that they were afraid that he was going to then call for a massive armed uprising. He was trying to kind of just have kind of one of these instant coups. He didn't want bloodshed.
I'm still surprised that they would ever.
Yeah, it was completely stupid.
So he went on and made this speech.
So he went on to tell the television and gave a speech that spoke to everyone's feelings, and the whole public rose up and said, there's our leader. So what happened was they threw him in jail. He said, okay, I give up. Shoot me, whatever you want to do. They threw him in jail. And, of course, the public outcry was huge, so they released him in 6 months. And then he ran for president and won with 56% of the vote, and I think the runner-up got 20%. I mean, it was crushing because people said, that's what we've been waiting for, some guy to say no to the International Monetary Fund, yes to keeping our oil money,
poverty. And land distribution.
Land distribution. Right. It was basic. You know, the thing is, Chavez, over the years I've known him, likes to play Fidel with the big, long, ridiculously long speeches and the tweaking the nose of the USA and calling and Bush Mr. Danger.
And flying around and meeting with the heads of various countries.
Ahmadinejad, right, these berserkers, et cetera. But actually, he's more FDR and John Kennedy, kind of Alliance for Progress. In fact, most of the programs that he put in place were simply those that were designed by the Kennedy administration and the Alliance for Progress. When John Kennedy said, those who make peaceful revolution impossible make violent revolution inevitable, Kennedy understood that very well. And so it's kind of the reformist stuff. So he gives big speeches. People make a big difference between Lula, who I know also, and who is the president of Brazil, the leftist president of Brazil, and Chavez. Actually, they're nearly identical when it comes down to actual on-the-ground policies. Chavez is not anywhere as left as he says. Lula is not anywhere as market-friendly as he says. They're almost identical. Just, you know, stylistically, given their positions. And Chavez's position was simple. I've got oil. You don't.
You know, so this palling, you know, I'm devil's advocate, you know,
right.
Read all this New York Times stuff. And, you know, you can see when you read the New York Times after a span of like years and certainly on every issue. But here, so then you know what to expect. So you see all the things in the New York Times about this guy was really a bully. He had his own private jet. He gave his family money. He flew around and, you know, he suppressed the opposition, which is a question we could ask. I mean, how did opposite political parties or freedom of press fare under Chavez? I mean, was he was he good about that? Not good about it? What?
There's no private Manning. You know, remember, we had a New York Times. It's so funny that the New York Times is editorializing about Chavez crushing the opposition while one of their reporters, Judith Miller, was in prison for revealing information. There is not one political prisoner in Venezuela. And I don't say that easily because I had fights with Chavez over this, by the way, that I thought he was still too tough on the opposition because I wasn't going to kiss his tuchus.
Well, when you say too tough, what do you mean by too tough? I mean, what happened that you said that?
Oh, well, what happened was during the coup d'etat, there was the most popular television station called for killing Chavez, call for the violent overthrow of the government, call for people to take up arms and shoot the people trying to overturn the coup. Is crazy.
And what did he do about
and
that?
And so if you did that here at PRN, you would end up losing your license, if not going to prison.
No, they'd put you in jail.
They put you in jail.
That's right. Against the law to
do
that.
It's in the Constitution. The penalty is death.
Right.
Chavez magnanimously did not touch the station. He said, okay, you know, I'll let it go. But then he waited. And no one would have objected, frankly, if he closed the station at that point. Because clearly it was a criminal. It wasn't a station. It was a criminal enterprise. But he waited like 4 years and then till their license expired and then wouldn't renew their license. Now, to me, that smacked of dangling being a good boy. In other words, if the station's a good boy, we'll give you your license. If you're not a good boy, we're going to take it away. I thought that that really sucked. I thought that was really a
like
very bad idea. You don't pull licensed stations of, and then to go back and say, well, look what they did during the coup d'etat. Well, yeah, if they committed a crime, you should have. I actually thought that those guys, I met with the CAN TV executives. I met with those people.
And these are people who were in the upper class, right?
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I actually thought that if they were Americans, they would have and should have been arrested. But if what you're doing is saying, we're watching you for 4 years and then we'll close you down because you still haven't knuckled under, I despise that. I also was very unhappy that Chavez had charged his main political opposition or the guy running against him for president, who I knew well too, a very decent guy, and charged him with taking money from the U.S. government for electioneering. I looked and he did. Okay, he did. And that's illegal in the U.S. too. But again, I think in the context of Caracas and Venezuela, I said, look, whether he gets money or not. And he, by the way, he said, yeah, I took money, but it was for what's called the Republican Institute. We have the U.S. federal government gives money to each political, to the Democrats and to the Republicans, who are allowed to then use this to support, as they call it, democratic movements in foreign nations. Basically, it's the way our government, through our political parties, pays off foreign politicians. And I just thought Chavez is going to crush this guy with tweezers in the election. And so what was the point? What was the point of creating this fear? And I didn't like that. So it was compared to what Obama has done in terms of, as a journalist, in terms of what I'm afraid of today with
pursuing
my
whistleblowers, the NDAA.
I'm scared to death for the people who are giving, you know, this is Greg Palast. Please give me information. Go to gregpalast.com. Contact Greg if you have some stuff. But I do worry about what will happen to my sources. I'd be far less worried if you were a Venezuelan giving me information against Chavez. Mm-hmm. And then, so I did have these disagreements with him. I just thought he should be more magnanimous. Chomsky did too. Chomsky complained to him because
This is Occupied Territory America. That's our new name for the show. We added on America so people don't get confused about what Occupied Territory particularly refers to. And this is Mike Fader, your host. And we're talking to Greg Palast, investigative journalist, author, international, man of mystery and danger, and he is here. He's actually where it does reports for the BBC. You may have heard of him many times on Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman, and he's got several books under his belt, and the latest one is
Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. Greg Palast investigates the Koch brothers, Karl Rove, and their buck buddies.
And also, you have DVDs for sale on your...
Oh, actually, I wanted to mention, forget for sale.
Okay.
For free, I've decided that there's so much propaganda about Hugo Chavez, so much crapple in the U.S. media, that I'm making available for free. Go to gregpalast.com. You can download the film I made for from my BBC reports, called The Assassination of Hugo Chavez. What you're going to see is what you see on primetime TV in Britain and you see on no time TV in America, which is the real story of Hugo Chavez.
And this is, let me just, it's GREGPALAST.
You got it.
GregPalast.com. Okay, so that's where you go.
And, right, so
okay,
you can
so a free DVD. That's good because this show... Basically, you know, we don't. We're on the opposite side of selling things and regular political channels here.
And by the way, and I want to note that I've often been a guest on the Gary Null show. So,
oh yes, that's true. I've heard you on Gary's show.
Yeah.
Okay. So you all know Greg, and so you can go there and get a free copy of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Without skipping out all over the place, there's a bunch of questions I wanted to ask, but things that come up now. A couple of things you mentioned was now the two big things in Latin America, and it's been this way for hundreds of years. And this is where you get the, you know, Augusto Sandino. This is where you get every revolutionary in Latin America who gets shot down by United Fruit or whoever it is in the U.S. Marines. It's always natural resources and land redistribution. This seems to be the two main things because you have these people, and you mentioned them, the people who consider themselves Spanish or white or European, lording it over about 80 to 85% of the people in this country who they consider beneath them, who originally were slaves, who were serfs, who were peasants, who still are in many cases. So, and the United States right there to preserve all the dictatorships and all the corporate perks. And so Chavez comes along and he's right in the middle of this kind of classic economic and political and military mix. He wants to. Now, we got the oil companies and land redistribution. Maybe you could address those two things.
Yes. And there's a third, which we'll bring up. But first, the oil. Venezuela. And this is one thing I got from inside the Department of Energy. It's now official that Venezuela has the world's largest oil reserves, five times the reserves of Saudi Arabia. And people, most Americans don't realize this. Saudi Arabia is a suburb of oil compared to Venezuela. And so that's why Chavez was, of course, of great interest. He wasn't just some small player. That's why Dick Cheney was particularly concerned that he was in power. The other is that, but what happened was Chavez, when he moved, came into office, changed the taxes and the royalties paid by the oil companies.
And what were they before?
They were, they got 16%, so they got about 84, the oil companies kept 84% of the value of the oil that they were pumping. And Chavez doubled the 16% to about 30%. Payment for the oil companies. Now, you have to understand, by the way, at the same time, the potentate of Alaska, Sarah Palin, did the same exact thing.
Right. Yeah.
She actually hit the oil companies for about the same taxes that Chavez did because oil had gone from 10 bucks a barrel in 98 to 110 bucks a barrel in 2004. I mean, so it was ridiculous to have these old royalties. Plus, Venezuela has very heavy oil. And for the super heavy oil, they're only charging 1% with the idea that that would get the oil companies involved in the business, but they're giving it away, 1% royalty. He said, I'm not charging it. So that went up to 16%. Well, that's worth a bullet, isn't it, if it's the biggest source of oil? So they wanted to, and they squeezed Ecuador, which is a smaller oil nation before, and got Ecuador to actually quit OPEC, the U.S. State Department. So they wanted Chavez removed because of this. The oil companies went berserk. Exxon, in fact, pulled out and has sued Venezuela, saying that their properties have been seized, even though they're taxed. I mean, that means that Obama can be, that the United States of America can be sued because Obama just raised taxes on the rich. You know, that's all he did was raise the taxes. The second thing he did, and this was very dangerous for him now, is that he redistributed land. Now, that's part of, again, the old Kennedy Alliance for Progress program. Venezuela is gigantic, big as California.
Right.
And but yet it can't feed itself because it has untilled land, massive unused land.
I'm talking about millions of acres.
Millions and millions of acres controlled by plantation owners, white plantation owners, foreign plantation owners. And Chavez said, if the land is not used, we're not going to seize properties, but if the land is not used, we can take that land to give to the poor. And you get a small compensation. Well, the first resistor, the biggest resistor, was a company called Heinz, which had a giant ketchup factory in Venezuela, which supplies all of Latin America. They had this huge ketchup factory.
They grow tomatoes in
there? And then, of course, they would have the tomatoes grown. They controlled the tomatoes. So that Chavez was attacking their
They owned a lot of land they weren't utilizing?
Yeah, they weren't using.
Okay.
But they didn't want to give it up, of course.
Right.
And the other is that Chavez also increased the minimum wage, and they refused. And Heinz Ketchup Factory said, we're not going to increase the minimum wage. We refuse. So we're going to shut the plant. Tomatoes will rot in the field. We're not taking them. We're shutting the plant. Goodbye. And so Chavez ordered the seizure of the plant, and the plant is back in operation buying the tomatoes and making ketchup, and told Heinz, you abandoned, and Heinz went crazy, and Chavez said, you're not getting compensation. You abandoned it. This is abandoned property.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, Mr. Heinz is now our Secretary of State. That is John Kerry. Who's married to Teresa Heinz, who, by the way, Kerry is now, as of last week, a billionaire because of the sale of Heinz. And so we have a billionaire Secretary of State whose family is personally at war with the Chavez administration.
What, they're still battling
inside
international courts?
Or
what are we talking about?
Yeah, they're just berserk about this, Heinz. And also now that it's been, I'll see what happens now, it's been taken over by Brazilians and Warren Buffett have bought it out. We'll see. They're going to be a little more politic.
You get like the United States government. You have people like Cheney and Bush. You have Chevron. You have Exxon. You have all these other people. Then you have the Heinz, international. How is it that he managed to stay alive so long? And there are rumors about his death.
Yeah. Well, how did he manage to stay alive? I think it's actually quite miraculous. He'd offered to write the introduction to Vulture's Picnic. And I said, well, yeah, but you have a serious deadline, like before you're dead, because we thought it would be a bullet.
Right.
And I said, but then, of course, I actually wouldn't do that because I will not allow some politician to put their fingerprints over my stuff. I don't care if they're how charming they are. And he was very charming. I mean, look, it's really hard. Like, you're sitting here, for those who have seen me, I usually wear a fedora, as I've done all my life.
Sam Spade kind of hat.
Yeah, so he took my fedora and put it on he used to call me Dick Tracy. And, and he's singing a tango about a man in a fedora and stuff.
It's hard to resist.
It's really charming, but I worry about things like, I really do, because it's, you got to be very, very careful. But
look how far Archarmer's gone with his big smile and screwing everybody else in the country.
I know. I think David Brooks, just snaps in his pocket. I don't want to get too whatever.
David Brooks, please.
But, so what happens is, Chavez had very excellent intelligence, and a lot of this was because of this white-black split in Venezuela that basically you'd have lower-level officers and infantrymen and stuff who would get information about any plots and would pass it on.
Obviously, this is the same old, same old, same old. It's racism, too, right?
Yeah, racism is a big part of
all of this. Yeah.
Big part of it. And you have to understand, even the New York Times, their reporters are white,
mm-hmm.
okay? Even the white, like this guy Romero. Who went to Chavez. Chavez was just re-elected. Well, he gets elected by a landslide. Even the Carter Center, and by the way, the Carter Center hates Chavez. They're funded by a guy named Cisneros, who was one of the owners of the TV station that was closed.
Hmm.
So Venezuelans who hate Chavez support the Carter Center. The Carter Center said, elections are cleaner than in the United States.
Hmm.
They have the only voting machines, which also give you a certified voting receipt, printed receipt. He got that idea from me, by the way. He read The Best Democracy Money Can Buy over the air, and about the theft of the election in Florida. For those who may be familiar with my work, I did a lot of investigations for BBC on how Catherine Harris fixed the vote in Florida. And he decided that if he could get voting machines that you couldn't mess with, he would be better off. And if he sold them to the United States, we'd have fair elections here, and he'd be better off there. So his buddies bought a company called Ivotronics, one of the biggest makers of voting machines in America.
Hmm.
But we still never got the technology is left in Venezuela that certifies the vote. You know,
because that's leftist technology.
Yeah, right. Well, it's pretty hard to steal election if you have both electronic thing, and then you take your ballot, a printed ballot, you review it, and you stick it in a locked box. And then if anyone says, "Hey, the computers are screwed up," you crack open the box and you match it.
Well, that's never going to happen here.
That's never going to happen
for the obvious reason.
Never going to happen here. So Chavez is winning. Even though he was overwhelmingly popular, you know, they simply could not stand this idea. And so they began this propaganda campaign against him. He's a dictator. He's a strong man. Romero asks him, he says, after this big election landslide,
Romero's the Times reporter.
The Times reporter asks him, so when are you going to give up power?
Give up power?
Right.
He was elected.
I know. It's like going to Obama, say, well, you know, like this week and saying, so, Obama, when are you going to give up your power? When are you going to give up power? And, you know.
Well, were there any term limits down there that he overrode? Because, you know, people will do that. I mean, you're talking about a man. I mean, he was a brilliant man.
Right.
Far more literate and well-read than, let's say, the New York Times or other people would have you believe he was.
Right.
Or the Spanish, quote-unquote, who
right.
were down there. A brilliant guy, tremendous amount of energy, very popular. And took about an A personality, a triple, quadruple A personality.
Exactly.
And the kind of guy, and he knows what the cards are like. They're stacked all around him, all over the place. A guy like that will tend to want to assume certain powers and keep them. He's not going to give them away.
Well, as he said, even about the assassination attempts, he says, it's a chess game and I'm a very good chess player. Is what he told me.
So what he
did was there was a, and Venezuela, like a lot of Latin states, do not allow re-elections. So you usually have one-term presidents like in Mexico, and that's it. And so he, with his overwhelming support, there was no question that he was going to move to change, to have a vote to change the Constitution. But unlike Mayor Bloomberg of New York, as you know, Mayor Bloomberg of New York eliminated term limits.
Well, he bribed the city council to overrule the people. There was a majority vote in New York City not to have term limits. And he went around the people of the city of New York and bought himself a new election.
Well, it was very simple. He told the city council members, you can vote to overturn the people's will and you can get reelected. So literally, the strong man, Bloomberg, of the mayor of New York, eliminated term limits by fiat. Whereas Hugo Chavez put it to a vote, and the first time, by the way, he put it to a vote, he won. But then when he ran for a third term, he put it to a vote, and he lost. He lost by half a percentage point to change the Constitution again, and because he had changed it to two terms, right? He lost by half a percentage point. How does a dictator, with especially Florida, Louisiana, Ohio, Venezuela. If someone's a dictator, have you ever heard of a dictator losing a vote by a half a percentage point? He accepted. He said, I accept the will of the people. But
And when was that?
That was a couple of years ago. But what happened was...
So this term would have expired and then he wouldn't...
No. This new term would be it. But the other thing is that he had another... What happened was when he tried to change the term limits the third time, he also tried to change all kinds of other stuff in the Constitution.
Like what?
Well, it would ensconce a higher minimum wage in the Constitution. Oh. It would ensconce the right to health care. I mean, it might sound all very benign.
Do they have a legislature and a Supreme Court?
Yes, they absolutely do.
Do they count for anything?
Well, they do now because they have often, in fact, in the current legislature for a dictatorship, Chavez does not have a ruling. The Chavistas don't have a ruling majority.
Oh, interesting.
They have most influence. For a while, they had an overwhelming majority because there was a boycott by the opposition, and so there was no opposition in the Congress. So they overreached, and the public didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
So they voted against the change in the Constitution. But then they had one more vote where the only question was, can the president run again? Then it was overwhelming because people were happy to have Chavez. They just didn't want, you know, all the stuff that they thought was mysterious, like small businessmen and stuff, you know, even though I think they were wrong about the putting the minimum wage in the Constitution. They were afraid, well, what happens if our currency goes to hell or whatever? This is in the Constitution. So, you know, but it's a thriving democracy more than you have in the United States.
Hey, let me ask you this question. Here's another devil's advocate, all straight from the New York Times. Tremendously high raise in the crime rate down there. I mean, kidnappings, murders, muggings, testimony from people all over the place. And they sound like, I don't want to get, it doesn't make sense to pick on people, but it sounds like upper middle class. It's like a lot of the Cubans who had a lot of money, who fled Castro's Cuba and ensconced themselves in Miami and said, this guy is a criminal and everything else. Well, if Castro, definitely much more of a dictator in a lot of ways than Chavez ever was.
Well, he's a dictator because he's not elected. That tends to be my definition
of
a dictator.
But even his behavior, throwing people in jail.
You cannot. Yeah. Okay, one thing I want to be clear of, and this is, I have problems with some of the friends on my left over this issue. Chavez is a staunch, strong Democrat, a guy willing to actually lose a vote by half a percentage point. Yes, he closed one opposition TV station I didn't like, but most of the press is against him.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's a thriving democracy.
Is some of that legitimate against him or funded from the outside against him? There's some
of it's funded by the outside, but so what? Carlos Slim of Mexico owns the New York Times,
Excuse me? can you
Oh, the Sulzbergers, they sold it to him. They keep what they call a golden share, which gives them some final veto over any changes he might make, but they're bankrupt.
So he's a billionaire down there.
Yeah, the richest man in the world. Carlos Slim is richer than Bill Gates, and he owns the New York Times.
What is his money based on?
Telecommunications. He owns all the mobile phone system in Venezuela, by the way, too. In Venezuela, in Mexico, Colombia. And he's very, very
amazing.
He's worth about $60 billion, Carlos Slim, and he bought the New York Times.
That's even more money than I have.
Yeah.
And you, I think. Yeah, that's a lot of money.
He could buy and sell Bill Gates for lunch.
Okay, but there was legitimate and is legitimate opposition to the
well-funded. Chavez. Yeah, and they're well-funded and fine. But Chavez is a real personality.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the big advantages, which they always scream about, is that he had the most popular TV show on the air. Because, they had this state TV, which was always kind of like Soviet style or PBS style, or kind of no one watched it.
Right.
So he put on a show called Alo Presidente. Hello, Mr. President, right? And he had singing and dancing, the most popular singers, dancers. He'd flirt with all the
women. Was it a weekly show?
Yeah, it was every Sunday, fly his desk somewhere to some town. And people go berserk. In fact, I was on the show. I was trying to keep my head down, literally, not be seen, because there are some nasty people with guns there that wouldn't mind removing me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm in the audience just to watch what was happening. Because I've been to the same town the day before with his opposition leader, and the rally that the opposition leader had was one woman. So we went into her kitchen, and she made us arepas. It was great. The guy's a decent guy, but no one cared about him, right? And so Chavez shows up, 2,000 screaming people trying to get into the TV show, which is done outside. It's like 190 degrees out and under a tent. And I'm in the middle of the show. I just pass out. I just heat exhaustion.
It was that hot.
I just pass out, and then they stick my head in this bucket of ice water, and then I'm like, so here I am, this guy on the ground with the ice water all over him, and Chavez looks at him and says, Greg Palast!
What's this, on TV?
Yeah, right. Come on up, It's like, no!
But that kind of thing, like you said
before. But people love that.
But see, people do love it, and it's charming. But, I wonder, and this one of the reasons why there are people who get away with so much politically in this country is because they finally discovered that they can, Republicans have not discovered this, obviously.
Right.
But a guy like Obama and other people, and look, his wife is wearing a $5,000, $6,000 dress. While people in this country are on food stamps, she's got a $6,000 dress. She knows about celebrity. He knows about celebrity. And it bothers me for lots of reasons, and I wonder if it bothers you, that the celebrity has taken over in America, people making intelligent choices about real people. Now, he's a real guy. But still, they use celebrity in a very manipulative way. Now, Chavez is doing the same thing. That kind of stuff bothers me. Does it bother you?
No, because I use celebrity.
I didn't notice.
but like Best Democracy Money Can Buy, the audiobook is being read by Alec Baldwin and Ed Asner and Amy Goodman, another celebrity, and I think Gary read a section. But it's like, celebrity has its great value.
Until it starts to replace real content. That's the problem, or Trump's democratic processes, and it can happen.
Oh, absolutely. But, I know a lot of heads of state. That's part of my job. And the most successful ones are true celebrity personalities, larger than life figures and deeply charming. And
well, maybe that's just the way of the world. People who
and
get
if
to be,
you want, if you want to have a populist movement,
right.
if they have the guns and money, you can have the charm. And that's least, if that's how you're going to win is with charm instead of bully tactics, I'll take that any day.
Well, that's true if you had a choice.
But I do have to, like I say, as a journalist, you got to be really, really careful because it's so darn, you know, it's charming. And, and you know, he quotes Whitman to me, and he never talked about this much on there. He had an English girlfriend.
So he's married and...
No, his wife divorced him.
Oh.
But he had this English girlfriend, so he didn't like to talk about that much because he was, like, obviously the most eligible bachelor on the planet. But he
but
always
still,
seemed
but
like
if he had an English girlfriend, that wouldn't look too good to maybe his
Exactly. But that's how he's learning English. so he was reciting Whitman in English.
My father learned how to dance when he was off on a business trip. His dance teacher was very helpful with
I see. Yeah. Well, that's my, my ex... canceled my trip to Argentina when she found out I was having tango lessons.
Yeah, well, it's tango lessons. Yeah, right. You know, English lessons. It happens that way.
Yeah, it's a deal.
Education can come in many different
forms. Right, and yeah, exactly, many positions. But the but at any rate, so Chavez, that's how he learns English. But yeah, it's charm.
We got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah, so I think the big thing with Chavez, and by the way, the third thing, we talked about the oil and the land, but the big thing, and if you go to Vice Magazine or you go to GregPalast.com, you'll get it up. You'll get it. I'll make sure it's up in a few minutes. An article I had that was what excited Chavez and also Correa and Lula and Kirchner and these other things that I'd written. I was doing studies with Joe Stiglitz and others and coming out of my work with Milton Friedman on the idea that American banks and the U.S. Federal Reserve were not only extracting oil from these poor nations and not only using the land resources, but were extracting the capital. People didn't understand that. Whatever money went out into Latin America came back and then some. It always turned around. And what they hated about Chavez, what really drove them completely nuts, is that Chavez said, no more of this. Our oil money stays here. He pulled $20 billion out of the U.S. Federal Reserve in Venezuela's name. He used it for microloans. And then as more oil money came back in, he backed up Argentina, Brazil, and Ecuador when they told the financial vultures to go to hell.
He helped Castro out too, right?
Yeah, he just said, you know, if the IMF says we're not going to give you money, and that goes back to watching those people getting shot down during the IMF riots. When he saw the riots in Argentina against the IMF, he said, I'll tell you what, I will back all the bonds of Argentina. Hmm. And when it happened in Brazil, and people were in the streets, he said, I'll back the bonds of Brazil. When Ecuador, Correa said, I'm not going to pay these usurious vulture charges by the banks, and I'm not going to listen to the IMF, Chavez said, fine, I'm sending a ship of oil distillates to your country right now. And by creating what the Wall Street Journal called the tropical IMF, it completely eliminated in Latin America this financial colonization.
And does this persist still?
It still persists today. And that's and what Lula says, that's the number one legacy he has, is eliminating the financial control of Latin America, that we are now independent. And that's his great legacy. And much more than, and even the people in his own country don't understand that extraordinary, extraordinary feat.
And internally, the literacy rate and people, the poverty, medical care, everything straight up.
Poverty's way, way down by, you know, like three quarters.
Right.
Medical care is way, way up. Education's way up. I mean, it's extraordinary. There's no one in the world that doubts the validity of these figures. But you say when you talk about crime, what happened is
what happened there?
Is that now there's such a resentment against the rich who've moved into the centers of Caracas and other big cities in giant high-rises, just like Brazil. It's now like Brazil.
Gated, guarded.
These gated, guarded places that they hate these people. There's such a class war that a lot of people say, the hell with it. We don't care about these. They start feeling like the rich are not humans either, and they can, you know, you can just shoot them and take their wallets or whatever. You know, so it's like kidnap them and hold them for ransom.
So it's gone a bit far in the other direction, right?
It's gone in the sense of like, now, Chavez certainly did not like this massive increase in crime. He said, it's not revolutionary to hijack someone's car.
Right,
that's not a revolutionary act, okay? So he tried to stop it, but there is this, unfortunately, this literally armed class war that's going on.
All right, we got like 1 minute left.
So I just want people to get the film for free. Go to GregPalast.com.
Okay.
Download The Assassination of Hugo Chavez. It's 24 minutes. You'll hear what you won't hear otherwise. And I have material on the Koch brothers versus Chavez in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. But you can also get that on the site without having to buy the book.
Last question. So Maduro now, who is Chavez, anointed heir, is what is he now? Was he the vice president?
He's the vice president.
Okay, so
and
now he's running the country, right? Or he's in charge officially. Anyway.
Yes.
And there'll be an election, right?
Yes, next month.
What do you think is going to happen? The U.S. and the corporations are going to be right there trying to, screw
Chavez
this.
Chavez didn't win by that much in his last race, but this time... because of the feeling about his death, there's no question that Maduro is going to win overwhelmingly. I know Maduro. Actually, Chavez sent Maduro over to my office, my little detective agency on 2nd Avenue, so we could trade information on assassination attempts, because I wanted to write about it, and he wanted to get
Is Maduro afraid of a coup or an assassination attempt prompted by outside forces, i.e., the U.S. government?
No, I don't think he's afraid at all. Maduro is a very straight guy. He's not exciting. He's not a celebrity. He's a very just a decent guy, and I think that's good. I actually think Venezuela will be, frankly, not taking anything away from good Hugo, is better off right now. They need just some safe pair of hands.
All right. Got to stop now. Guest has been Greg Palast, and you heard where to go to get the information and the DVD. This is Mike Fader. It's Occupied Territory America. Check out our Facebook page, same name, Occupied Territory, and we will be back next week. Thank you very much for coming down. Now we hear something we would never hear in a million years on regular media. Thank you.
De nada.
Okay.